Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 16, Profit Motive. Teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, based on material by William N. Stape, and directed by René Auberjonois.
Odo himself. Sorry.
Yes, go ahead. That's all right. This episode aired on February 20th, 1995.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Grand Nagus Zek has become a philanthropist, and Quark worries that he may have gone insane. Bashir is nominated for a prestigious medical award. Well, here we are, Elise, Season 3, Episode 16,
yeah, Profit. Yeah, I said that already. I'm just teasing you.
Profit Motive, and that's a P-R-O-P-H-E-T motive, not a P-R-O-F-I-T motive. And I was wondering if you remembered this episode or not.
I did not.
Nice. It's always nice when you don't remember it.
It is fun. It's like
watching it for the first time. For the first time in forever. Elise didn't remember any part of this episode.
I really didn't remember any part of this episode. That is very true. But profit. We have a Ferengi episode with Grand Nagus Zek. I am very excited. Love Wallace Shawn. Love when he is on Deep Space Nine. And he gets to act a little out of character in this episode, which is a lot of fun. He was so giddy and silly in this episode. That one scene when they're like in the sick bay and he's just touching all of Bashir's like gadgets. Like it was very amusing.
Trying to pay Bashir, and Bashir's like, I can't accept. He's like, give it to charity.
But yeah, the episode title, like, when I first read it, I probably even read it as the word profit, not profit. I don't think that those sound different, so you can just imagine that for yourselves.
The F-I-T versus the H-E-T.
Yes. So, like, I already assumed it was going to be a Ferengi episode, even though it was the word profit, which is something we associate with Bajorans.
Yeah, we love a pun. We love, you know, a title that has layers. It's like Shrek. It's an onion. Yes. It has layers.
Yes, for sure.
Also kind of gives away the whole twist of the episode if you think about it, but, you know.
Yeah, that is totally true. I always get excited when the self-sealing stem bolts come up. Like,
say that 7 times fast.
Yeah. I'm not even going to really try. But I get so happy thinking about Nog and Jake, like, trading a bunch of shit and, like, getting stuck with these stem bolts.
Yeah, we love a self-stealing stem bolt, I think. I still don't really know what they do.
They self-seal. That's what they do.
Well, I mean, that's good, I guess, if you need it to do whatever it does. Dear listeners, if you know what a stem bolt does, please email us or tweet at us at podrace@gmail.com or at podrace on Twitter.
So I have some comments about Rom's quarters and how Quark acts in Rom's quarters.
Well, I'm glad you have thoughts, because if you didn't have thoughts, it'd be a very short podcast.
So Rom's quarters are apparently only clean when Nog is home. That's Nog's job, is to clean up. Okay. Second of all, I would watch a comedy show of Quark having to move in with his brother because, like, he lost the bar or something and can't pay his rent. Like, I would watch that show. It would be ridiculous. It probably would only last one season because I feel like it would get old after a while, but for that one season, it would be excellent.
So it's like a early, like, pre-Tiger Blood era 2.5 Men. Something like that.
Yeah, I would say if you include Nog in the situation. Yeah, I never saw
Two and a half Ferengi. I've never seen a couple episodes, but like 15 years ago. I don't really remember it. But
I love that you put in 15 years ago. Like, someone would be worried you watched it last week or something. Matt secretly watches Two and a Half Men every Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm actually a huge member of the Two and a Half Men fandom. What most people don't realize is the show got better when Ashton Kutcher came on. No, just kidding. I never even watched
that. I forgot Ashton Kutcher after had the whole anything like to
Tiger
do
Blood
this.
Situation. I'm pretty sure it was Ashton Kutcher who replaced Charlie Sheen when all that shit was going down.
Not to get too much into etiquette, but did Quark just assume that because Zach was taking his quarters, he would just bunk with Rom? Or did Rom actually invite him into his home? Because if Rom did not just invite him into his home and he just showed up, I do not feel bad about the mess. If Rom invited him, then I feel bad about the mess.
Yeah, my thought is, or my inferences I should say, just knowing what their relationship's like, is I'm sure Quark like voluntold Rom,
right?
You know, just like, oh, I'm moving with you. And like the funnier bit for me about the whole like mess situation and that like sitcom-y sequence is Quark's finding all the stuff that Rom and Nog have stolen from work.
Oh yeah, he was like, I'm gonna inventory like your whole apartment basically.
That was
really
fun.
Funny. I did laugh that, like, okay, Deep Space Nine clearly is a place that people visit all the time. Like, I'm sure there's like a hotel section and then like an even specialer section for special guests. Why is Zach staying at Quark's? It makes no sense. It's very silly.
So my short answer to that is it's for the lols, for the the comedy of it all, like the like from the production perspective. But yeah, in like thinking about that a little bit deeper, I guess maybe Zach, while he was working on the revised or updated rules of acquisition, wanted to keep it on the DL to have this big like grand reveal with his publisher or something like that later. And if he had like booked guest quarters, there'd be, you know, record of him as a guest or something like that, right? That was kind of my inference.
I have an almost even more galaxy brain take that springs off of this. He didn't want to use the quarters that someone else that needed to stay there could have used because of his new outlook on life, because of what happened in the wormhole.
Yeah, I like that. It adds an extra level of benevolence to
Zach
putting himself in his Winds of Winter bunker, George R. R. Martin style.
Exactly. Oh my god, I love it.
So the other like thought that I had, or one of the other thoughts I should say that I had about this episode, is it fits really nicely with the format of the show, because there was a classic A plot and a classic B plot structure, which, as we go through, is more episodes of Deep Space Nine than it's not, but less than I thought when we initially
decided. Yeah, there is less than I thought as well.
How to format the show. but yeah, there's that moment we talked about in sickbay where the Negus Zek is getting checked out, where we have like this nice intersection of the A and B plots.
Oh yeah, so Stoned Elise is watching this episode and like was completely Bill and Ted, Keanu Reeves, whoa. When Quark brought Zek to see Dr. Bashir, like, in my mind, there was this deep connection between the A plots and the B plots converging at this moment, and it was like, it was a good time had by all.
It was like that moment in the first Avengers movie where they all come together and the camera, like, spins around them in that great joint group hero shot. It was like that for you?
No, it was like seeing it the second time in Endgame.
Okay. It's like when Captain America like picks up Mew Mew and says Avengers Assemble.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. I can never say Mjolnir? Mjolnir? I don't know.
Mjolnir. I know it's not that. But I say Mew Mew also. It's just easier.
I'll just do the Darcy Mew Mew.
Yes. The first time I watched this episode the other day, I was like, you know, you're 2/3 through the episode and all of a sudden Odo pops in. And I'm like, man, we haven't seen Odo before now, have we? Like, he might have been there at the scene at the beginning with Bashir and the award nomination, but like, I don't remember. And then I realized it's because Renee was directing the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the rest of the cast kind of like, Sisko and Kira in general weren't in the episode that much either. It was mostly like Julian with either Dax or O'Brien, and then Quark with Rom and the Negus.
Yeah, it was like, I don't think we've had like a Ferengi episode in a while. So it's kind of nice to have everyone there for that. But then also I feel like we haven't really had a Bashir episode in a while. So it was nice to see him too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I felt like this storyline for Bashir really worked to help mature him a little bit. I've been saying, I really enjoy where his character goes from where it started. You know, he's nominated for this year's Carrington Award. I guess he and Dax admits to having recommended him for it. And I don't, you know, the whole I won't win, blah, 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 can be a little bit of a cliche, I feel like, in a show. But the reason why I like this plot isn't really even about that. It's the fact that this, whatever led to this happening, happened off screen. We didn't watch him do his like molecular whatever research. We didn't see Dax nominate him. It just makes the show feel a lot more lived in to me, that there are things that happen that we don't witness, and that the relationships between the characters continue when we're not watching. And I just, it brings the characters to life for me, and I really like that.
Yeah, and like, this episode is interesting in regards to like the Carrington plot and the Bashir plot, because it's very much showing and not telling, right? Where it's like the Carrington Award, the episode outlines, is usually a like crowning achievement in someone's career. And it's, you know, you're part of your swan song last act before right. your retirement. Mm-hmm. So Bashir is kind of like, no one knows who I am yet. I haven't made my mark. This is too early. I'm not going to win, blah, 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 blah. But then it's really like clear that he is like conflicted, because he does, you know, work on an acceptance speech and he does want to win. And he is like disappointed when he doesn't win. But right. he's also uncomfortable with everyone like gassing him up, saying that, you know, they hope he wins and everything else, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that push and pull between who he was in wanting to be, you know, recognized and thinking he was hot shit and, you know, right. everything else. So it's like he's kind of rectifying who he's growing into and who he's maturing into with that really kind of, I think, totally valid based desire to be recognized for your work, right?
Right?
And like, what does that look like with the like hard won like maturity that he's gotten, right?
Yeah, and I do think that this is about him understanding what this award means more than him not wanting to be recognized, because I do believe when he's 70 years old, he will be like loving his friends gassing him up about something like this. But because it'll be at the right time, or the time it's, I hate to say supposed to be, but
yeah,
the time you're supposed to get nominated. I mean, he makes a point of basically saying, like, after you get this award, you usually, you know, it's the end of your life. You're going to live for another 5 more years, maybe.
Yeah.
So I feel like him understanding what this award is more than his friends, and them not kind of believing that it's really, like, the embarrassment felt real to me because he understands and they didn't.
Right. I wanted to call out, too, that I think this is the first time we see Miles and Julian playing darts together.
Yeah.
And having kind of a conship in, like, their friendship kind of sequence in the course of the plot. They make reference to being sick of racquetball and having played umpteen thousand games.
It was since 106. Keiko left it.
Thank you. 106 games since Keiko left for Bajor. And so now they've moved on to darts. They're currently in the cargo bay. I'm interested to see how long they stay in the cargo bay or if the dartboard moves to somewhere else. But I think also from a real world production standpoint, you can just put up a dartboard anywhere and have them play darts and have that scene instead of like having to redress the hollow suite set to be the racquetball set anytime you just need one scene like that. So I think that was like a real world reason for the change of Miles and Jalen being over racquetball.
Yeah, darts is somewhat portable, as you would say. The other plot in this episode is the plot with the Grand Nagus. He shows up on Deep Space Nine. He's very cheerful and actually acting loving towards Quark, I felt. He's excited to have visitors. He's just very different from his usual grumpy demeanor. As we said earlier, he kind of takes over Quark's quarters. And this is not the point of that scene, but when Quark and Rom go back to Quark's and all the furniture is gone, like, logistically, I'm like, where did all this furniture go? Like, did he sell it? Did he just put it in storage? Did he give it away? Like, is Quark ever getting his bed back? Like, what's happening here? And then I realized that this is my own anxiety over, like, losing things that is pouring into me watching this episode of Deep Space Nine.
Sometimes we reflect on what we left behind, and sometimes we reflect on what we bring with us. the things we carry.
Oh my gosh.
Including Quark's bed.
I don't know why I focused on the bed. That is, we don't need to analyze that part.
How do we sleep when the beds are burning? How do we sleep when the revised rules of acquisition are being written? Yeah. So, Zek is... He's decided that his Carrington Award, that his legacy project, will be these new revised rules of acquisition. What did you think, Elise, of the updated rules of acquisition?
They sounded really nice. You know, I did feel that Latinum tarnishes, but family is forever. Felt a little bit too live, laugh, love for my taste.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were all basically the opposite of what they had been prior, you know. Latinum rules, Latinum drools is pretty much like the old version, the new version. I did enjoy that Quark and was like, something's wrong here, and then Rom immediately gets like swept up into it and is like goes along with whatever the Zek is up to. And Mehardo, the bodyguard for Zek, is just constantly like crying in this episode in a really funny way. Like, he's just really upset that the Zek has like changed. He is a mostly silent character who actually has a line in this episode. So it's just really funny just that his whole, all of his reactions are just him crying.
Yeah. Something that I wanted to pick your brain about and like talk about in this episode is how good Armin and Max are as Quark and Rom. And the Ferengi episodes are often played for comedy. That sometimes are a little bit lighter in tone, they're a little campier, and you can tell. But what I really like about Max and Armin's performance in these like fun, campy Ferengi episodes is that they're not leaning into the comedy of the material. Like a couple weeks ago when we covered Fascination, and it's this very kind of like Shakespearean comedy and, you know, Midsummer's Night Dream and things like that. To Quark, this plot is deathly serious. It's a serious tragedy. Yes. The situation to the viewers, we get amused by it and find it funny. But to Quark, the stakes are high drama, right? And he takes it, like Armin's taking it very seriously. And yeah, there is comedy in that, but they're not like leaning into it in a really like slapsticky way, which I think really works for me. And I think that's also part of like how serious Armin takes his craft and like takes the Ferengi seriously and like working with largely Ira to reclaim the caricature that they were and like the joke that they were in Next Gen, right?
Yeah. I always feel that Armin and Max play the characters mostly straight, which I think really works and actually does sell some of the comedy a bit better. When they're extra doofy, it's not amusing at all. To me, Quark is taking it extremely seriously. He says that Zek is the financial leader of a billion Ferengi, basically implying that this is going to destroy their economy, which is very serious. So I completely agree with you on them taking this seriously. And it did feel very serious to me. The only thing that wasn't 100% working for me, and it has nothing to do with their performances at all, I felt the conversation, and this is really getting ahead in the notes, but it feels relevant now. The conversation that the prophets were having with Quark felt a little heavy-handed to me. Like, we all know capitalism is bad, and that's, like, the whole point of the Ferengi. So for it to be, like, explicitly said on screen just felt, like, a little bit too much for me. Which is, like, not to say I support capitalism or anything like that. It just felt like it was like it took something that has always subtly been true that we've known from the show and like kind of throwing it down your throat a little bit, which I think subtlety is often better than that. I prefer it.
I think that the whole framing of like the idea of the prophets being kind of upset or disgusted by Zek seeking them out or, you know, seeking that orb out to gaze into the future for future profit motives. And then they tell Quark that they basically rewrote Zek's personality to an earlier stage of Ferengi development or evolution when it wasn't quite as, again, they don't use these words, but like neoliberal capitalism, it was like this kinder, like gentler version, like a they didn't, again, not using it, using like, you know, common nomenclature or slang or whatever, like a air quotes woke capitalism, right? And yeah. Again, I would argue that that's an oxymoron by definition. And yeah, it's still at this point, you know, when we have the live, laugh, loving, or, you know, Quark not being able to sell the stem bolts and being Zek redirecting the potential client to a wholesaler, that being heretical to the Ferengi orthodoxy, it's still like perpetuating, I think, this capital and capitalism, and like that's not the opposite of Ferengi culture. It's just like dialed down a bit, right? And it would have been interesting to have a result of Zek's experience with the prophets, be they wormhole aliens, gods, however you want to look at it, to being something like a little more akin to liberation theology being a branch of Christian theology that largely came out of the global south in the 60s and 70s. Again, there's liberation theologians in the United States, James Cone being one of them, and it's has a book on like Black faith and Black power. I can't remember the exact name of it now, but the idea of that Christian theology is like a call to, and I'm oversimplifying a bit, but overthrow capitalism, like, right, more or less, right? To act in like to be Christ-like is to actively respond and undo the injustices of society, right? Including, you know, capitalism and, you know, imperialism and et cetera, et cetera. So it, on one hand, it would have been interesting to have Zek do that, but I guess it's funnier to do the live, laugh, love thing.
Yes.
But then also, I think in some ways, that's like my candidate, or not some ways, it is my candidate for the most Star Trek thing, because that it doesn't quite go far enough. It's like, well, not even half-assed. Just like, whether intentionally or non-intentionally, it's like, oh, capitalism still will exist, right, but it'll just be like, it's a kinder, gentler version of it, right? And like, in between the first and second time I watched this episode, I was like, do I have like a larger take on this material? As listeners will know, you know, it, again, it involves the prophet. So we're obviously talking about, you know, I've already mentioned like liberation theology and like things like that. So it's like, can I go full mad on this episode? And there's something that's called like a numinous experience. So that's like when someone has this life-changing like encounter with the divine, right? So an example could be like Moses in the burning bush, or an example in, you know, Christianity is Saul's conversion to Paul on the road to Damascus, right? And it's this idea where you have this totally like life-changing experience and like your path is kind of forever altered, right? And this is idea of, you know, talk about sages as like spirit people and their closer connection to the divine and, you know, mission that comes from that. But I think what struck me the most in kind of reflecting on some of this is that over the course of human history, we've always ordered and managed our religious structures based on our political realities, right? I think a good example of that would be the rise of prosperity gospel and like a further integration of like capitalism with like evangelical Christianity and different things like that. But you go back, you know, thousands and thousands of years, and the ways in which we structure whatever religion reflects the political structures of the culture around it. So I think there's a little bit of that going on. So maybe that's why, you know, the Ferengi still, it's like a slightly less exploitive version of an exploitive system that maintains. But yeah, you'd think the prophets would have wanted to go further than just live, laugh, love, but they didn't.
I know I jumped around a bit. One of the things that's I okay. really enjoyed was once Quark decided that there's something wrong with Zek, like this is not, there's some outside influence happening here. That the episode almost turns into like a mystery at that point, and he and Rom are trying to decide if there's like a secret message in the new rules. I hate saying new rules because then it makes you think of fucking Bill Maher, and all that. I used to watch that show. This is not going to be an episode of me just like saying all the shitty things I used to do, but that is one of them. But like seeing if there's some like secret message, like they're like, holds it up to the light. Like they just like cannot believe that Zek, or I should say Quark, cannot believe that Zek is in his right mind. Which I just enjoyed that a lot. And, it, you know, he obviously finds out that it's correct. He's correct. And he has, and Zek has this Bajoran orb that he wants to gift to Bajor. So there's this whole element about how, yes, it's a Ferengi episode, but it was funny to me that the whole episode was kind of like going to eventually revolve around this Bajoran orb, and Kira was barely in the episode because usually if there's something relating to Bajor or orbs, Kira is there. So I would have liked more like of her, like maybe this wouldn't have been super funny, but like Kira realizing at the end that Zek was going to try to sell the orb to them, and like her just like yelling at them or something. I don't know. Maybe I just want Kira to be yelling at someone all the time. So while I was watching the episode the first time on Friday, because as I said earlier, I did not remember this. So Quark comes up with this insane plot about how he has to assume that Zek was going into the wormhole and talking with the prophets because he needed to see the opportunity, that the opportunities that like are in the future. And I'm like, that is the most demented thing I ever heard of. And then I'm hysterical laughing because that is exactly what Zek actually did. So I just think it's really funny that Quark always like guesses some horrible thing that someone's doing and then it's always right.
I mean, he understands, he's got a head for business. He has an understanding of, like, Ferengi culture and stuff, right?
Yes.
it's interesting to me too, like in the ways that this episode is like a parallel to to Emissary, to like the pilot, and then they even reference.
I was thinking that the whole time.
Yeah, and they reference that even the prophets, meaning they reference that when they meet Quark and ask if the Sisko sent him, and talk about, you know, the Sisko teaching them about linear time and all of that stuff. And Quark's version of that is like, you need to put Zek back because you're going to destroy society because we have no profit motive, like profit. Mm-hmm. We need, like, and all these, like, and this is where, again, like, it's supposed to be satirical in a way, but it's like all these arguments you hear from like center, like left center to right wing folks about why we can't have a welfare state because you will destroy people's motivation to better themselves. So it's like this like anti-federation, we work to just, you know, better ourselves in this post-scarcity society where it's like scarcity will always exist and we need to work to be able to live and blah 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 blah, so you need to fix Zek, the whole universe will fall apart. And the prophets are like, really? And he's like, okay, I exaggerated, but like,
I like, because like they're like, they just didn't care for that bullshit, basically. They're like, that is not a good enough reason for us. I do think the comedy of, okay, well, we'll just annoy you to death is a really funny out for this episode. Everyone, if you do this to me, because they threaten to change Quark as well. They're like, we'll do it to you as also. And he's basically like, well, I came here to see what happened to Zek, so people will come here to see what happened to me. And if you just keep changing all of us, we're just going to come back and keep annoying you. So you better put us back, and then we'll just forget this all happened. It just really worked for me. I found that very funny.
Well, and it always kind of, like, that's Quark's MO, right? Is to just be really annoying and come across pathetic, because that's kind of how he survived the duels in House of Quark.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So, not exactly the same, but similar. That's our guy. That's our Quark.
I really enjoyed that pretty much everyone in the entire cast of this episode, except for Wallace Shawn and obviously Armin, were playing prophets. I thought they all did a really good job.
And we even got to hear Mehardu speak. Prophet Mehardu.
We heard him speak as himself also.
That's right.
Apparently all you need to do is open an ore box while you're going through the wormhole, and then you get to hang out with some prophets. I didn't realize that was just like the key.
Well, it's like, did he go to the wormhole? Were the prophets coming to him? Was it happening in his mind? It's just, you know.
Yeah, there was a bit where it was like Inception a little bit, where like there were layers, and I'm like, is this still the dream? Like, it wasn't clear, and that was kind of fun.
It's the dream.
Did you like the episode?
I did, yeah, yeah. It was like, when I started watching it, I was like, oh, this one. I remember this one. And then I was like, is this a skippable one? And it's like, no. There's some interesting stuff in there. That was part of my like reflection before rewatching. It's like, do I want to have a deeper take on this? How much do I want to let, you know, my baggage out and like, you know, completely get a deep reading of bring liberation theology into it when it like,
well, I appreciated
the episode's not that concerned with it.
I know, but I still enjoy that conversation because that is so different from how I look at things. So I will always be interested to hear your thoughts, even if they are out there.
Hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Hey, Mambo.
Oh, I have a story about that song afterwards.
So earlier we we said that you had to delete your Kyrielles at someone. Thought for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. So who's your nominee this week for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher?
I really enjoyed Quark and that lady that was going to buy the self-sealing stem bolts from him, having that foreplay before they signed the deal, which obviously they never signed, which was Quark's downfall or whatever, apparently. But just to open the episode with, like, the Umax was a choice. And it is funny. This is not sexy, but to have that scene with Quark and then the scene with Rom, like with the ear cleaner later, was just like very funny. And it was like two, if you had a scale of like sexy Ferengi ears, like the ear cleaner would be on the one end, and then the scene at the beginning of the episode would be on the other.
Hey, dude, it's really important to, you know, keep your erogenous zones hygienic.
That's so true, but I don't, you know, earwax is gross. And they have very big ears, so they probably have a lot of earwax.
I have never thought about it before. Thank you for that new fixation of mine. Every time I see a Ferengi. I already mentioned earlier that the way opposite of Ferengi hypercapitalism being live, laugh, love, and still capitalist was my nominee for the most Star Trek thing of the episode. What about you, Elise?
This isn't really like the most Star Trek thing of the episode, but I will just say that every time Grand Nagus shows up and the fact that Quark never knows he's coming and it's always like a surprise just gets me every time. So I just want to shout out to the fact that every single time he shows up, it's a surprise and I love it.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention in the episode?
Nope.
Okay. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes. I recently changed my social media handles. You can now find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at chicken_tendy. And you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd as well at MattyHugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Twitter and Instagram at PodWraiths, and you can also email us at PodWraiths@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song, and thank you to our editor, Melissa.
Until next time, computer, end program.
Bye.